Hello and welcome to Greenish, the only podcast that discusses what money and kale have in common.
From money and kale to mindfulness and capital, our mission is to discuss this intersection while speaking to the entrepreneurs that fuse both.
We're your hosts. I'm Ari.
And I'm Kate.
And today we want to kick things off a little differently than usual. Kate, take it away.
Rise up with the light of day. Warm weather is en route. Visualize your best spring self. What do you want to shed? What do you want to embody? Set your intention for your most radiant being. The season of new beginnings is here. This is your time to shine. Start by giving thanks, a morning ritual we do daily. Say it loud and mean it. There's power in your voice. Get on your mat or kundalini sheepskin and open your portals. Tune in and turn yourself over to 3 minutes of chanting. You are magnificent. Or sink into a comfortable chair for 20 minutes of transcendental meditation. Let yourself go deep. Feel the energy rise as you make your way into the kitchen, the land of nourishment. Then find your journal and find your center. Write it out. Anything and everything that comes to mind. Don't edit, don't judge, just write.
Head to the park and get your sweat on. Meet a friend or take your dog out. Run, jump, and engage with the power of your body. Head home for a shower and a nourishing meal. Head out for a facial or infrared sauna or lavish yourself at home. A day of dry brushing, baths, and replenishing masks electrifies you in every way. Radiate. Feed your brain. Drink a green juice and head to the kitchen to prepare a feast for your friends. Start a game of charades. Engage your mind and body. They work better together. Love abounds where deep health thrives. Thank the day for all it has offered. Tomorrow will shine. You just heard some excerpts from A Day in the Life, Spring Fever, from one of our favorite books, High Vibrational Beauty.
Today we want to focus on intention. The inner purpose that drives your habits, facilitates your outcomes, and allows you to shine your brightest light from the inside out. And we are lucky enough to have Carrie Lynn on today's episode. Carrie Lynn, thank you so much for joining us. We're so excited to have you.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here. That was so nice to listen to. It's been a while since I've read that. So thank you. It was very nice.
Carrie Lynn Paymer opened the doors of Cap Beauty on Valentine's Day of 2015. She co-founded what is now the all-natural beauty e-commerce site with Cindy DePrima out of a love of wellness and inspired living. The site is a destination for the best in natural skincare, plant-based pantry goods, and inspiring community through the incredible content of The Thinking Cap, which features the beauty cabinets of curated individuals, gift guides, and recipes that align wellness and beauty.
In the Greenish spirit, we want to kick off each episode with a discussion about your roots, your background, your childhood. What did this look like for you?
So I grew up in Oregon, and my family spent time between Portland and Central Oregon. And I have two siblings, both of which are substantially older, 8 and 10 years older than me. And so I've always said that I feel like I have siblings, but I also was a bit like an only child because I was so much younger. And my parents, I think, had been, you know, parenting for quite some time, and then I came along. So there was less guidelines and less kind of rules in place when I landed at our house. So I was pretty independent as a child. I was really very, very into animals. I still am very into nature, outdoors. Pretty internal mind. I loved reading, making things in the yard, playing with the animals, and I would just kind of be by myself. This was, you know, many, many years ago. I'm 51 now, so it was a vastly different world in terms of what we were allowed to do at that point in time. And my parents were like pretty traditional, heavy drinkers, kind of cocktail parties, not into wellness, not into health in any realm. Like, my mother was an amazing entertainer, an amazing cook, but not in the way that I kind of engage with food now at all. And so I learned like a love, a deep love of entertaining and caring for others from her, but not necessarily like my cooking did I learn from her. My focus was always like really like around animals and plants and being outside and reading. And that was like where I came from. And it's, I was just telling you prior to starting the show, we recently moved to California about a year and a half ago, and we live like in the country. We're like an hour outside of LA proper. And there's, you know, a horse farm down the street that I ride at, and, there's mountain lions and rattlesnakes and bobcats. And it really is pretty wild here. So I feel like I've gone back to my roots after spending 25 years in New York, which feels kind of bananas to me now. When I look at that, I just can't imagine spending 25 years there, but that passed really fast. So that's a very long way of saying like animals and nature and, were highly important elements of my childhood and still really are at this age that I am now.
I love that. And I love how parts of your childhood have completely manifested in your career as well as you moving back there. That's awesome. So then what really drew you to New York and like the concrete jungle, I guess you could say, from the West Coast?
Well, I had always been interested in New York, but I had never been to New York before moving there, which is another moment that just feels really crazy to think that I had a boyfriend prior to my husband who I'm with now. And we met in Portland and we packed up all of our stuff. He was from the East Coast and moved there. I had literally like, I hadn't even seen a toll road. Like I'd basically not been to the East Coast. I didn't have enough money to get across the George Washington Bridge. Like I didn't have enough cash because the car was too big. And I was so clueless. Like I feel like kids now are just so much more advanced in terms of what they know. But I went to school for interior design. And so it seemed like having an interest in art and design and aesthetics beyond nature was a really big reason for wanting to go to New York. It seemed like the epitome of the place to, you know, like the spot to go if you wanted to be immersed in those worlds. So I ended up going there and then being there for, like I said, a really, really long time. Like I've spent half my life on the West Coast and half my life on the East Coast. So I feel very kind of in between the two. And I feel like both of them sit deeply in me and have formed who I am, but really just the excitement of living in a place like New York. It was so dramatically different from my upbringing in Portland. I think it was that wanting to just experience something as different as possible.
I love that. And similar to you, Ari and I both have a strong connection to the outdoors.
Yes. So I'm actually a triathlete and I love all things like hiking, mountain biking, all of the above.
So for all of our listeners living in New York and big cities that really yearn for that nature fix, what were your favorite ways in New York to feel an energetic cleanse?
So we were fortunate to live right by Prospect Park. So many cities have green spaces that we just kind of overlook, I think, because we think that we're in a city, so we don't really notice it as much. But I believe that, you know, there's like, I'm not saying all spots, but a lot of cities do have places where you can engage with nature and just get your kind of feet on the ground. I think it's so powerful to just, you know, take your shoes off if you're in an appropriate environment and put your feet on the ground and just like feel the earth underneath you. I don't do that often enough here, but I'm always barefoot. And I feel like it really does make a big difference to be able to get your feet on the earth with a bit of intention. And just being around trees, bringing some nature into your home, like whether that's, I mean, I would find like branches on the ground in New York and I'd just bring them home and put them in a vase or something and just feel like you have something from outside that connects you when you're not able to be outside. You know, and New York and other cities, like I think the biggest point for me was like everywhere has sky, right? So it's like no matter really where you are, you could be in like the tightest concrete jungle ever, but like there is a sky above you. And I always kind of would tune into that and remember that there's a sky that's above you no matter what your kind of landscape literally is. So I would like think about the sky a fair amount when I didn't feel like I had physical access to like kind of the majesty of being like, you know, in the Santa Monica Mountains or something.
My mom grew up on a farm and she was always saying like emphasizing the importance of being barefoot. So I resonate to that.
What is a valuable lesson that you feel you learned in your first post-college job that you feel you had to draw upon throughout your career. And I believe it was at Martha Stewart Living. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I had a bunch of like random jobs before that. Like I worked in the bakery at Balthazar. I worked in the bakery at Dean and DeLuca.
That's my favorite.
I was going to say, I think that's Kate's dream.
I actually worked at Dean and DeLuca and, in the bakery. And then Keith McNally, who started Balthazar, came and hired me. And I worked at the bakery at Balthazar when they opened. That was really cool. But Martha, oh God. I mean, I learned so much there. And I think probably the biggest thing, you know, it's funny when you tell people or they know that you worked at Martha Stewart, there's such a, more often than not, a really negative reaction where people are like, oh, was she horrible? And I feel like it's this very unfair kind of question that is directed at a lot of women as opposed to men. So I find myself feeling kind of bristly about it because she was really demanding and it was a very rigorous place to work. But I learned everything. Like there was a discipline there that if you wanted to continue working there, that you had to bring to your role every single day. And I learned that. And I believe it really shaped me in who I am as a person and also who I am as a business person. And I think just like that, like real dedication and true commitment to learning the most you can about a subject was always something that I found really interesting and inspiring about her. Like when she wants to learn about something or like when that was translated into the magazine, it was such a deep dive into that. And it was so committed. And I really love when people are super committed and go really deep on things. And so I think that was probably the biggest thing, but also just like there was an expectation that you had to be really, really good at your job. And most of the people who worked there really loved it and took a lot of pride in working in an environment like that. It had like a very good reputation. This was many, many years ago. And I think that's really important. I mean, you know, like I've had employees since then who are younger and kind of, I don't think were raised with that kind of work ethic. And I think I don't think that's beneficial to their career. I don't think that people have to be workaholics, but I think being disciplined and committed to what it is that you've decided to commit to is really important.
Absolutely. I feel like that's kind of the show up ready to work and learn and be present or don't show up at all kind of concept.
Definitely. And your Cap Beauty storefront opened in 2015 in the West Village. But it really all began before that with your clothing store called Castor and Pollux.
And we know that in 2010, you actually introduced some natural beauty products into your store and watched customers completely fall in love with both the concept and the reality that beauty truly does start from within.
Yeah, and when you saw people resonated with beauty on a more personal level than a clothing item, you knew that you were onto something. From the power of plants and rituals, your audience connected to it on a deeper level than fashion.
So we want to know how you first became introduced to wellness and natural beauty. Natural beauty was truly at its infancy when you introduced it into Castor and Pollux.
Yeah, I wasn't interested in wellness really at all. I was like, I loved drinking and smoking and eating a lot of really good, not good for me food. And I kind of felt like shit all the time. It was a very different world and landscape. And my husband and I were really committed to eating really well and drinking really good wine and just kind of partying. I don't drink anymore and just, I drank too much at that point in time. And I felt terrible all the time. I didn't feel well a lot of the time. And so I went to a doctor, not to really like fix me, but just for an annual physical. And he was a doctor that my previous business partner, Cindy, had recommended to me. And he was by no means like alternative or oriented more towards Eastern medicine. He was like a pretty classical allopathic doctor. And, you know, I said to him, I don't feel that great. And I'm tired all the time. And I had really, really bad skin. Like my skin was always broken out. Like it would like hurt all the time because I had such intense rosacea and cystic acne. And And he kind of wrote it off, and he was like, well, you live in New York, you own your own business. It's stressful here. It's kind of how it is. And I think I was like, I can't remember, I'm bad with timelines when they're kind of far out, but I think I was maybe like 36, 37. And I remember saying to him, but like, if I feel this way now, like there's no way I'm going to get to be 80. I was like, I can't, like, this is just getting worse. This can't, like, I can't sustain this, how I feel. He was like, yeah, it's just, you know, this is aging. And I just like, I couldn't believe it. It like really came up like as a shock to me. And so we did blood work, just like standard protocol blood work, not calling for anything in specific, just like normal annual blood work. And he called me and he said, I can't believe that you're like able to function. Like you're not retaining any nutrition in your body. Like your blood work came back with basically nothing. And he said, I'm pretty sure you have celiac disease. And I didn't really even know what that was. But I was like, I told you, I felt like shit. He's like, yeah, but I didn't really totally realize how bad you felt. So I had to do like the test. And I think you abstained from gluten for 2 weeks. And then I ate gluten for 2 weeks. And I was so excited because I didn't used to eat gluten that much because it never made me feel great. And I could eat so much of it that I would gain a lot of weight from it because I would never feel sated from it. So it was like kind of not the thing that I would turn to. And when I was little, I didn't like sandwiches and I didn't like pasta. Like I didn't like things with gluten in them, but I didn't make any connection because I was a child. I was just like, oh, I don't like those foods. And then they did the test on me, the endoscopy. And I remember showing up at the like endoscopy clinic and the doctor saw me and he was like, so sometimes these come back negative, but just given the way you look and after having seen you 2 weeks before, I'm going to tell you, you should never eat gluten in your life again. Cause I gained 12 pounds in 2 weeks of eating gluten. My skin was like sores. Like I could barely stand on my feet. They hurt so much. And so I found out that I had celiac and that really launched, you know, who I am now and launched me into who I am now because I really started to see a very, unmistakable connection between what it was that I was eating and how I felt and how I appeared. Like my skin cleared up immediately. I lost excess weight and I felt really great. And I was like, well, if this is helping me in this manner, in terms of what I'm ingesting, there has to be a connection into what I'm using for my skincare products. Because prior to having CAP, since I had such challenging skin, I was always at the dermatologist and they were doing like peels on me and like my skincare would hurt my skin every night. Like when I say hurt, I mean, like I would go to sleep almost in tears because it was so painful, the process of what they would give to me to try to calm, which seems so wild now, but to calm and soothe my skin that was just reacting to something that I was eating. And then that's when I was like, and then it all just kind of like was like clicked in.
Wow. So as you saw the demand and the engagement with natural beauty products in your store grow, how did you decide to close Castor and Pollux and open CAP?
So I had been looking at like the Castor and Pollux model for a while, and this was, you know, pre-fast fashion. I mean, there were like bits and pieces of it, but it wasn't as large of an industry and a part of our kind of culture in the way that it is now. And it just seemed pretty obvious that fast fashion was knocking off designers faster and faster and faster, offering things for less and less expensive. And so you had to be a very certain type of person that had the ability. And so when I brought in the natural beauty products, it was a totally different experience.
Right. But even with fast fashion, you know, it seemed to be even deeper than that. It's like you saw there was an open segment in the market where people wanted something but weren't sure what.
We're curious, what was your experience in initially introducing natural beauty products?
It was like something they engage with daily. So there was the justification for whatever the price was. It was different than buying a dress that you're going to wear like once, I don't know, a month. And the price point, even though natural beauty is not inexpensive, it was less expensive than most of the items that I was selling in the store. So there was an accessibility that was opened up, not for all, but there's an accessibility that was opened up beyond like, you know, a very expensive dress. And they just started feeling better. And that was really wild to actually see somebody feeling better and engage with it. You know, as you know, like I love rituals and the whole reason that CAP came to be, the idea was there's a perfume store in the West Village that was very close to Castor and Pollux and CAP. And I used to go there all the time. Like I would have like a good day or a bad day or a whatever day. And that would be where I would go to reward myself or like buy something nice for myself. Because it wasn't like buying a piece of clothing, which was out of my price range at that point. And it still felt really luxurious and kind of fancy, but I could leave and walk away and not feel like really horribly guilty about buying something that I didn't feel like I had the means to buy. And then when I got into natural beauty, I couldn't like really be in that store because it was all synthetic fragrances and really beautiful synthetic fragrances, but like my body just couldn't process them anymore. But the best of the best. And I was like, well, where is the store that is this, but translated and modified for people who have kind of different wants and needs in terms of what it is, what their rituals and skincare and fragrance needs are. And so that's how I concepted CAP, where I wanted it to be a space that felt really aspirational and sophisticated, but also really inclusive. You know, like I wanted it to feel like a place for discovery and learning and that nobody was unwelcome at. That was really important to me.
Well, and I bet there was a major degree of customer retention where when people tried the products, they were obsessed with them and they just kept coming back for more. Can we actually talk about the CAP mission? So it's beauty is wellness and wellness is beauty. Kate, I don't know about you, but I think I need a sweatshirt with that like immediately.
Ari, same. I love this concept. And I've always believed that the two can't exist fully without sitting next to each other. But Carolyn, you and your co-founder, Cindy, created a manifesto at Le Pain Quotidien on a napkin, and it hasn't changed. The seamlessness of this really shows that you knew your mission from the beginning. A manifesto is really an intangible glue that holds a company together.
So interestingly, Kate and I did some research, and there seems to be a huge trend in businesses centering their companies within their missions. And statistically speaking, mission-driven companies perform better than those without a mission. And John Repelog, a partner at One Better Ventures, actually says that nearly 80% of millennials want to work for a company with a clear purpose that is more mission-based. And I mean, I think companies without a North Star are going to lose both in the talent market here and the actual market over time.
So for listeners starting a company, whether it's tech, wellness, consumer packaged goods, how do you begin with a mission and not a product?
I wouldn't really know how to do it otherwise, to be honest. I mean, having a company is really challenging and it's really hard and it's really great, but it's also like, it's a lot. And to not have a North Star that guides you through kind of the peaks and valleys of running a company, growing a company, I think you would run out of steam. It's like anything. It's like, I mean, you run triathlons, like, or you're a triathlete. Like if you're not doing it for something beyond just like, I'm making this up, but like, I want to look a certain way. Like that's not going to get you through, I don't know, mile, whatever. So I feel like anything that has, you know, anything, it's like in relationship with my husband, like we have a life that we've put together, that we've created, that has a lot of challenges and a lot of beauty in it. But like when you have something that is guiding you along for when things become challenging, which they always inevitably will, like that's what life is. I mean, we don't ever want it to be just one dimensional because then we can't experience highs and lows. It's like, we want all of those in there. But for me to not have that, motivator or, concept that makes me get up in the morning when it's hard, I think I would just not do it. I think I would just give up. That probably sounds like a real bummer, but it's really truthful. It's like, it's not easy. Like I have a company that's like a beautiful company that's driven towards helping people feel their best. And that can be great and amazing, but it's also can be challenging just because of the nuances of business. And to not have that thing that moves you through, I think would be challenging.
So CAP Beauty was, like we said before, co-founded with your partner, Cindy DePrima. And your company definitely seemed to blossom from like a shared love of wellness and just like an overall inspired way of living. And for Kate and I, Greenish similarly emerged out of friendship and some common values. So what was it like for you starting a business with your friend of 20 years?
It was great. I mean, it was really, really amazing. We each brought things to the conversation that were different, but we had a very kind of shared philosophy and vision and aesthetic. So that was like a really, I like having collaborators. I think it's a really fun thing to be able to, I can be very much in my own head, but to throw ideas around with somebody that you really greatly respect and look to for vision and aesthetic is like a really special thing. I think it's a very, very special thing to engage with another person.
Definitely. What is your advice for our listeners that have a great company or maybe even a podcast idea with their friend and are ready to take it to the next level?
I would say, I think similarly, like in relationship with partner, whoever that is, I'm talking about like kind of romantic relationship. Knowing what you want from the future, I think is really important because I think we're all different beings and we all want different things. And I think having a really strong understanding of what it is that the other person wants can be enormously beneficial to guide you towards that path. Because I think that oftentimes, more often than not, we have different wants for the future, like 5-10 years down the road. And those are, that's fine. Like that's totally normal. I think if you lay that out prior to the 5 and 10 year mark coming up, I think it's incredibly beneficial to have an understanding of what that person prioritizes in their future and what it is that they want and seeing if those things align. Because sometimes they won't and that's fine, you know, but sometimes they will and that can be a really great partnership that thrives over a longer period of time.
Next, we really want to expand on the concept of intentions with Cat Beauty. And I mean, everything you do is intentional. You guys literally installed rose quartz in the floors of your original store in the West Village to raise the vibration of the entire space. And that's just absolutely incredible.
We're absolutely obsessed with your cookbook, High Vibrational Beauty, which Ari and I have nicknamed the cookbook for the soul. The pesto kelp noodles are a weekly staple and I cannot live without the persimmon bark. And I find it a cookbook, but also a ritual book. And food is fuel, but also rituals and intentions are fuel. I would love to talk more about the title of the book. Can you explain what high vibrational beauty means to you and how you developed that energetic philosophy?
Yeah, I mean, I think that comes from the idea of where these products come from, and that's all, they're all from plants. And you know, whether you believe in energetics or not, like they're real, you know, like a CVS store feels different than how Cat Beauty used to feel, but we were essentially quote unquote selling the same products. And I believe that when you are around food that has been grown with a lot of love on a beautiful farm or, you know, wherever it is, that food tastes and feels different than food that's grown in a lab. They both serve purposes. But when one has a kind of a higher life force, I think that it feeds you not just on a physiological level, but it has the ability to feed you spiritually and psychologically as well. And I think when you use products that are created with a lot of love and intention and really superior ingredients, they just perform in a different way. And even, like I said, for people who don't believe in the world of energetics, like my husband is always kind of laughing at me, but then he'll every once in a while be like, oh wow, that room felt really weird and like kind of like cold. And it's that feeling like when you walk into a party, or we used to walk into parties or a room, and you can tell that somebody, there was maybe something that happened in that room just prior to you getting there that was like awkward or uncomfortable. You didn't see it, you didn't experience it, you didn't watch it, but you can tell just from the energy in that room. And that's kind of, it's not the best analogy, but it's an analogy that I always liken to this, because I do think that, you know, a carrot grown in a really, really gorgeous place with a lot of love and a lot of care going into that carrot being grown, it's the same in theory carrot as, you know, a carrot that was grown in a lab, but they're not the same. They're not like, so high vibrational, like I think of things in vibration, like certain things, like a rose is the highest, for they've recorded the rose frequency, and it has the highest vibration of any flower there is. And I believe that's why, this is my belief, but my own take, that's why the rose is one of the most universally loved flowers, because it has this really high vibration that a lot of people respond to. And it's, I think, probably the most common flower in the world. And I think it's probably because of that.
So for our listeners who might not actually be accustomed to the term vibration or frequency, what are some actionable ways that our listeners can really raise their own vibrations?
I mean, I think it's like really just the simplest way that doesn't engage purchasing anything or having to acquire anything is intention. I think I was just listening to some podcast, I can't remember what it was, and they were talking about the act of giving money to someone. And they did this study where the people who gave money to somebody unwillingly, but they gave them a certain dollar amount versus the person who gave money to the person who wanted to give money to the person, the way that those two acts lived in the body, and they tracked it, I think, in their brain. I think it was the Andrew Huberman podcast. The way they tracked it in their brain, it was a totally different physiological and psychological response from the two same acts because of the intention behind it. And I think like just how you do things has the ability to, I know vibration can be a word that feels like kind of out there and like, oh, I don't believe in that. So I'm almost like wanting to retract that word, even though it's a word that I really love and resonate with. It's more like, how does something make you feel? Like, does it, like high vibration to me, that's always going to mean that it pretty much feels good. Like it's a feeling that promotes joy in the body and the mind. Kind of like you have a really great workout and you have endorphins afterwards. That's if somebody doesn't like the term vibration, it's kind of that same feeling, like, oh, I feel like a little bit high in a good way from that. And so I think just intention, I think like doing things with thought and care is the simplest way. Like I really try very hard. Like the world that I exist in can be so elitist and it can be so expensive. And like having been somebody who grew up with like a disparity in income, like I know that feeling. And so I never want it to feel out of reach for somebody. Like people can do like amazing things and they can put, you know, rose quartz under the floor and they can get amazing massages and facials and all these things. And all of that is great. But I think more than anything for me, the mission is to kind of share with people that you have the ability to feel good through the intention of how you engage with something.
So in addition to having this intention and this manifesto for CAP as a brand, you also have North Stars within the High Vibrational Manifesto. And these are what you describe as being touchstones to guide your decisions. For anyone that hasn't read the manifesto, it's basically the 13 pillars that align intention and action. As CAP says, when our decisions align with our values, we access beauty on all levels.
And a few we're particularly obsessed with are embrace the power of plants, get quiet, move and sweat, be love. Okay, Carolyn, I've got to ask. There are 13 touchstones listed. And with all that CAP stands for, I've got to assume that that's intentional. So why lucky number 13?
Yeah, that's funny. It's just a number that Cindy and I really liked.
It felt right.
And it really felt right. And also similar to how when we wrote the manifesto, it was really seamless. Like we just sat down and wrote those and those were all of them. And it was like, oh, we're done. We didn't need to like fill in one more. It was just like, we wrote them out. It was really fast and pure because it's how like they're the tenets that we live by. And so to eliminate one would have felt odd and to add one would have felt odd. So it just kind of like landed there. And then also we both liked the number 13. So yeah, but it wasn't motivated. It's funny because so much you're totally to your point. Like you're right. Like you would think that that would be a very specific number, but it really was just like, this is the number because these are the things.
I love that. And I also love the one that says, be prepared. And it says, win the game before it even starts. With a little planning and prep, you set yourself up for victory each and every day. Claim the trophy. In health, life, entrepreneurship, how do we win the day?
Oh, I'm having a hard one with this right now, actually. Like I think probably because of COVID and because of working at home, I feel like a little off my game with this one, to be really transparent. So it's funny you're asking me that. But I do think having certain, my friend calls them anchors, which I think is a really nice term. Certain anchors, I went down a road of like having so much kind of rigidity around the things that I had to do that it almost like allowed a cancellation of the benefits of those things, because if I didn't do all of them, I didn't feel complete. And this was like very kind of early on and like when I started discovering this world, and I've since loosened up. Now I feel like I've loosened up so much that I'm like kind of like all over the place. But I have certain anchors. I think like having your anchors that you know are doable. I think like the biggest thing that I am focusing on right now is what's doable. And also the phrase that I've forever loved since I first heard it, which is progress, not perfection. Because I think perfection is just straight up paralysis. And I think it's that funny word that sounds like an underhanded like compliment to say about yourself, like I'm such a perfectionist, but I actually think I think it's actually a real problem in our society and our culture, is this idea of perfectionism, because I think it's rooted in fear and being liked and thinking your ideas are good and like all of these things that you don't create and you don't put things out into the world because you're scared of their external response. So I think perfectionism is pretty insipid and kind of evil. So for me, it's having certain anchors and those things morph. Sometimes I have a really, really, really strong meditation practice, and sometimes that falls away, and not beating myself up and recognizing that there's different seasons of life, especially with everything going on in the world now. Like, how do I move with grace and fluidity while still remaining true to what makes me feel good? Because if I feel good, I have the ability to make others feel good. And sometimes those things are super simple, like waking up and taking my probiotics and dry brushing, or maybe not even that, like, you know, just like, it depends on where I am. And I think, again, goes back to intention. Like, what have I decided that's okay for me right now? What works for me right now? Instead of forcing myself into like a little box, which I've done in the past and is not beneficial to me.
I like that quote, progress, not perfection. And it reminds me, I was listening to something and they were saying like, always do your best, and that one day can look totally different than your best another day. And I really liked that, instead of like a constant best, like your things around you are always changing, your situation's always changing, and just trying to make the most of the situation and aim for progress in that.
Yeah. I mean, that was the biggest lesson from my riding accident a few months ago, is I didn't recognize how, I love riding horses more than anything for the physical discipline that requires complete mental concentration in a way that no other physical activity ever has taken me to. Like, you can't let your mind wander when you're riding a horse. Like, it's dangerous. And so when I couldn't walk after the accident, it was so wild to look at like how much I missed exercise, but I couldn't do anything. And it made me assess exercise in a way that I hadn't assessed it in the past, with a lot of compassion, but a lot of like really intense honesty. And I realized like I had exercised from a place of wanting to feel different, wanting to change something physically, something mentally. It was all about modification. It was all about how can I all of a sudden feel better, look better, be better. And I didn't really realize that until I couldn't walk. And then as I learned to walk again, like the appreciation for my body, the intention behind being able to do a leg lift was motivated by nothing other than just complete wonder and joy at being a person who lives in a physical body that can move. It was really huge. So I think my intention, you know, now I do like my leg lifts and my physical therapy, and like, I love doing it so much. Like, it's like I get high from it. I'm like, oh my God, this is amazing. I can like lift my leg. Like, my husband will walk in the room, I'm like, look, I'm lifting my leg. I mean, it's so profound. And I had always thought I had been like an exerciser who wasn't doing it, quote unquote, like to modify something, but I was, and I didn't realize it until I had like a really kind of big wake up call.
So our intention now is to get into intentions. So what does this really mean, and how can listeners become more mindful and considerate about their habits and the mindset that creates them?
Cap believes a ritual is an intention with love. Two people doing the same activity with a different intention can facilitate totally different outcomes.
Yeah, and I think it's important to talk about how this also applies to daily life. I mean, I'd argue that running is a ritual, and I used to go on runs with the wrong intentions.
Yeah, me too. And at one point, I felt that exercise actually came from a point of scarcity instead of abundance, with wanting to change. And it's funny because a simple shift in my mentality took running from being the worst part of my day to my favorite part of the day. And I didn't change anything about what I was doing. I just changed why I was doing it. Was there ever a ritualistic habit that you had, whether it was surrounding exercise or food, where you shifted your mindset? Maybe the action was there, but the intention was off.
I mean, when I was in college, I was not good at this. So you guys are light years ahead of me. I mean, I think that the intention, like when you're in college, like you so eloquently said, like it's a time when you're encouraged to explore and kind of engage with as much as possible. And I think that that's a really amazing intention to have when you're in college. Like you just said that, and, you know, I'm so far beyond that in terms of my life path, that it made me kind of wistful when you just said that, to think of that encouragement to exposure in that way. I mean, I think that people should do that over the course of their life, but I think it is definitely more encouraged when you're younger and in the age that you both are. So I think that that's a really beautiful thing to recognize, that that's where you are, and to be open to that. And I think also recognizing that that might be something that you might not have as much access to the older that you get. So just kind of embracing that while keeping yourself as grounded as you can, that you need at that point in time. But I imagine you need less of it than you do when you're older, like that grounding. So I think just kind of finding that balance and that sweet spot, which will of course look different for everyone. But I think having a little bit of that kind of like earth sky feeling, like a bit of you rooted in the earth and a bit of you more ethereal, I think would be really important during the stage that you're both in. And then as you get older, the older and older I get, I think the thing that I love about getting older is I actually really think it's just the most exquisite privilege to get older. Like the other option is not the other option I want right now. The people who are older that I really admire and respect and look to with inspiration, they're all really curious. And like, I think having that intention of curiosity, whether that be anything like reading a new book or like, you know, learning an app, like that sounds kind of silly, but I feel like there are things that as we get older, we just kind of move away from because they're not as easy as they were when we were younger. Like I remember when I turned 30, I grew up skiing and I competitively skied and I hated it, but my dad was a ski person. And my husband was always a big skateboarder and he wanted to go snowboarding, and I'd never snowboarded. And I had been brought up to think that snowboarders were just horrible people because my dad was a skier. And so I went snowboarding with my husband at 30, and it was so hard and I was so bad at it that I made myself keep doing it because I knew the older I got, the more brittle my body would become. But actually I didn't want my mind and that ability to try new things and be curious about things, I didn't want that to become brittle. So I forced myself to snowboard for like, I don't know, like half a season. And I was terrible. Like, I can't even tell you. It's a miracle I didn't break every bone in my body. And then I got it. And now I love snowboarding more than anything. But the lesson there was like, I'm not going to not do this because I'm getting older. In fact, it's quite the opposite. Like the older I get, I feel like the more I need to be curious, because that will keep me younger on some level. Not like I don't really care about that on a physical level, but like on a, like, I feel good in my body and I'm able to do things and I'm able to engage with the world in a way that's really exciting to me. So I think the intention for me getting older is like to stay curious and open to anyone and anything.
I actually want to tie this into the concept of visualization. So in competition, I mean, winning isn't mindless. I learned this through the power of visualization in triathlons. So I grew up competing all around the country. And the one thing my coach would have me do every single night before a big race would be to visualize the race start to finish. He would literally have me sit down, close my eyes, and visualize every competitor, because I always knew who I would be competing against, every stroke in the swim, pedal on the bike, and stride on the run. And he would always say, if I can't visualize winning, I would never actually win. And I think the same goes with self-care, how you treat yourself, how you treat those around you, how you treat the earth.
Right. And I think anything can be a ritual with intention. For me, something I think about is sitting in the sun, and it's free and it's effortless. I grew up going to Palm Springs with my family and immediately became attached to like the desert sun, which, you know, from being a West Coaster, can be very relentless and dry, but it's truly the most beautiful place to me. And I really feel like the sunshine just fills my soul. And it's like looking at something that occurs naturally as a practice, simply basking in the sun for hours. I walk away feeling more free, creative, and grateful. But on the other hand, someone could sit in the sun for hours and complain about being hot or sweaty. And the activity is the same, but without the intention or the love being there, the outcome is completely different. And that's what makes it a ritual.
Yeah, I agree. I'm with you as well. My friends all call me the lizard because like the minute it's hot out, I just want to like lay on the ground. I'm like a rattlesnake. Like I just want to get as close to the earth as possible. I love desert heat. Yeah. And I think there's a lot of people who are terrified of the sun and wouldn't do that if their life depended on it. And then there's people like you and me who really feel great from that. So it's kind of that similar thing to what I was saying earlier from that podcast. It's like the intention behind the act has the ability to impact how that act lives in your body psychologically and physiologically as well. I think it's just all about like how you move into something.
I love how curiosity and resourcefulness is such a big part of Cap's blog, which is called The Thinking Cap, and also your book, High Vibrational Beauty. Cap really promotes the idea that taking care of yourself shouldn't be hard.
Right. You can buy a $200 face oil, but if you're putting it on as you run out the door, there's no love and intention surrounding the action. So it's not really worth $200.
It reminds me of when I was a child and I would go into the cabinets and mix together honey and banana and use it as a face mask. And I was so crafty because my parents weren't home and I couldn't drive myself to the store to go get a face mask. And it was fun and it was childlike and really accessible to me. And Cap really encapsulates the idea that beauty is simple. Even getting back to your breath is a way to increase circulation and release endorphins that make you glow from the inside out.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is I really feel like it should be fun and also accessible to as many as it possibly can be. Like I don't believe in exclusivity as a concept. I don't like it as a concept really. I think it's literally about like playing and having fun. You know, I remember I did the same thing when I was little. I would do it like in the yard with like mud because I grew up in Oregon. So there was always mud everywhere. And I would make like mud masks and all these like crazy things that I would bring inside and want to put on my mom. And she'd be like, I don't want that. But I think it's about like discovery and like seeing something that works for you and playing. And it's true. Like if you're buying a $200 face oil or serum and you don't consider it at all, like I feel like you're just going to have... it'll do something on some sort of, you know, level with your skin, but like, I think things done with intention have the ability to modify you cellularly. I think that you have the ability to shift how you function and are seen in the world. And that's not always easy to do. Like, I don't think everything has to be a ritual. Like I was saying earlier, like I fell off of a lot of rituals because I felt like a little bit cornered by them. But I do think like just thoughtfulness in what it is that you do. And we all know that like with food, it's like when somebody makes food with love, it's again, one of those things that like somebody could say, I don't believe in vibration. But if you have a meal that's made with anger, like it always will taste different. It just always will. I cook a ton. And like, if I ever cook and I'm in like a really bad state or a bad mood, or I'm angry at my husband or something and I make the meal, like it's just not that good. And I don't know what that is, like beyond energy, but I don't know how to explain that, but I know that it's real.
So now is arguably the best part of the entire show.
For all of our listeners, in case you're new, our episodes will always start and end the same. Just like you already heard us talk about Carrie Lynn's roots at the beginning of this episode, we'll end by talking about guest experiences during the most influential and outright crazy time of their lives. their 20s.
Since our listenership is primarily college students and those in their early careers, we want to center this last segment on them. And because those years tend to fly by, this is also more of a speed round with questions. Carolyn, are you ready?
Great.
So, if you could go back to your college age self and give one piece of advice about entrepreneurship or careers, what do you need to know?
I mean, don't drink so much.
Hey, we'll take that.
Entrepreneurship or careers, but don't drink so much. I mean, it sounds really rote, but like follow the things that interest you. Go down the rabbit hole with the things that interest you, even if they're weird, even if they're not quote unquote career interests, just follow them, see where they lead you.
Last year, I interned at Sakara and their motto is thoughts to things, and CAP embodies this mentality through intention. So how do we make the vision board a reality?
I think being really grand and being really practical is something that has served me really well. Like sometimes I felt like my dreams were just too big. Like they didn't make sense. They literally wouldn't compute in my brain. Like I couldn't piece them together to make a vision board or picture that actually felt true to me. So I think like you can make the grand one and then kind of work backwards and see how what it is that you're doing each day gets you to that. Like I used to have this a lot with like homes. Like I would want like this really beautiful, gorgeous home, but I wasn't taking care of my current home particularly well. And when I had this realization where I was like, well, what if I did have that perfect, I'm using air quotes here, home, would my life translate into it right now? And when I realized it wouldn't, then I shifted the things I was doing on the daily that would make more sense when I was over here in the place that I was trying to go to. I think it's the lottery concept. It's like people who win the lottery. I don't know what that statistic is, but it's a really high number of people who lose that money because they actually don't have the ability to extrapolate and see themselves as that person. So I think when you take the actions in your day-to-day that makes sense for that person you want to become, then it starts to make sense, at least to me, in my mind, there's a larger level of cohesiveness as to where I'm going, as opposed to it just being a fantasy.
So something you talk about is the accessibility of wellness. You've said all you need is a paper and pen to create a ritual, 10 minutes with your thoughts or breathwork. College students or those in their early careers commonly don't have the time or expendable income to indulge in common wellness practices. So what rituals and practices can our listeners do that don't require money, even in their 20s, to take control of both their mind and body?
I would say meditation. And I would argue that anyone can do it. I would say meditation for 2 minutes a day. And if somebody doesn't have 2 minutes, that's just not true. It's just not. 1 minute, 30 seconds. You know, I've had this conversation where people are like, I don't have the time. My mind races too much. It's like, well, that's how it works. But I don't think you need to buy anything. I don't even think you need the paper and the pen. I literally think you can just sit down. And I mean, I think probably most 20-year-olds have a phone or they can like watch something for a minute or count. I don't know. Say they don't have a phone, which would be wild. But sit down for 2 minutes and count to 120 and just focus on the numbers and do it consistently. I think consistency is the biggest thing. It's like that concept of like a really amazing yoga class that's 2 hours long versus doing yoga for 7 minutes a day. I think the latter is, for me at this point in time, much preferable to the former. Just doing it over and over and over again, even when you don't want to.
Our 20s are a time of exploration. So what are you currently reading? And what is a book that you suggest this age group really dives into?
I'm a really big reader. It's like really my fuel. I read a lot. And I have like a very diverse reading selection. I can be like really high and really low on it, but something in your 20s that I think would be really important. There's a book that I really love that's been around since my 20s. I think it just had its 30-year anniversary, that you probably all know, but called The Artist's Way. That is where the term morning pages comes from. And that's the, you know, dumping of your thoughts on the page when the minute you wake up for three pages, stream of consciousness. I don't currently do that practice. I have in the past, and it has been one of the most life-changing practices I've ever done. And you do need a fair amount of time. It's like 25 minutes to sit down and make that happen. But I think that that is a really, really important book for tapping into creativity and curiosity. I think that book is great.
Okay. I'm feeling pretty inspired right now.
Me too. I want to be more intentional. And we talk about bio-individuality, and what works for Ari might not work for me.
So where should our listeners start when trying to prioritize their intentions and figure out what rituals work best for them?
So to go back to the consistency thing, this is a tough one because I feel like we have such short attention spans. And especially with like a discipline that isn't like, I don't love meditating. I don't like get high from meditating. I don't feel wildly different when I meditate. I do feel wildly differently when I don't meditate though. There's that, like when I stop meditating, I'm like, oh, all of a sudden I feel like a lot crankier and I'm a little bit shorter tempered than I typically am. So I think it's tricky because oftentimes these things that we do, we want them to have really immediate impact and to feel different from them, or else we just say like, oh, that didn't work for me. So I think trying to try something out for, you know, I do Kundalini yoga, and in Kundalini, there's a marker of 40 days that has the ability, like once you do something for 40 days, it'll change how you experience the world. So I always personally try to do something for 40 days and see how that makes me feel, but also recognize that at the end of 40 days, it's not like I'm going to feel like a different person. It's like an accumulation of benefits that you'll get. None of these practices are like, I always compare it to like the difference between herbs and allopathic medicine. It's like herbs take a long time and you don't feel differently all of a sudden, whereas allopathic medicine typically kicks something out of your body really, really quickly and or makes you feel different really fast. So these practices are really subtle and they accumulate and they gain momentum over time. So I think just sticking to something for a period of time and seeing how it makes you feel without the expectation that you're going to be different after 40 days is really helpful.
Okay, so we always end with a final question called the greenish goal.
What is one goal you recommend our listeners set, from mental health to founding a company to mastering their wealth?
I would say, maybe it's not a goal, but I would say the act of being consistent is really what I live by. And I mean consistent. If you're doing something consistently that's not good for you, that's going to represent and express itself. If you're doing something consistently that is good for you, that's going to express itself. It's not exclusive to one or the other. So that gives me like wiggle room in there to not always feel like I have to be doing something. Like if I'm doing something consistently, that's the act that's actually really quite important and is going to be impactful in how it actually expresses in your life. So just choose the consistent thing that you want to come to life, not the other.
Perfect. Well, Carolyn, thank you so much for speaking with us today. We really, really enjoyed getting to know you.
We love this conversation. I know our listeners can hear you and we can see you too. You truly glow from the inside out. Mm. Thank you so much for being here today. You are such a light to us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you guys so much for listening to today's episode.
You can find anything we mentioned today linked in our show notes.
And if you want more, make sure to go to our website at www.agreenishlife.com.
And don't forget, we release new episodes every other Friday. We'll see you next time on Greenish.